Matilda Tude joining us for Kōrero today about life, teapots and politics. Hey, Matilda.
Hey, how you doing, Dan?
Yeah, all right, thank you. You still collecting teapots?
Oh, still, people keep giving me teapot cozies, tea cozies, so which is really cool. Like, I've got a bit of a collection of those now. They're really, awesomely tasteless.
Awesomely tasteless?
Yeah, no. Yeah, they're, really kind of fat and audacious. It's quite funny.
Kitsch.
I like this whole new idea. Yeah, super kitsch.
You've got a super kitsch kitchen, I bet, with all of your tea cozies. You'll have to convert them into hats for your fams at some stage.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. That's
hey, were you put to sleep by the leaders' debate?
Oh, my God, it was boring. It was really boring. Yeah, it was really dull. Mostly dull and otherwise infuriating, which is not a great state to be in. I didn't think, but this happened in 2017. The first debate between Bill English and Jacinta Ardern was, everyone was like, oh, that wasn't really great, because they're too nervous and they kind of don't quite know what the situation is. So I think the next two leaders' debates are much more likely to be more fiery because they'll have more confidence. But they pretty much stuck to their lines. They didn't really stray into new territory. So it was a bit dull. There were a few moments, I think, though, where there was a bit more fire.
They need a Matilda Tude in the mix. I want to see a Chris Cross. You know, at the moment we just see the sort of both of them are being fairly straight down the middle. You know, what actually gets them fired up would be interesting to see. But what do you? I mean, politics is a contest of ideas. What do you rate overall of the ideas being thrown out? And might you comment for a moment on what seems to be publicly airing wish lists, even though there's very little chance of you achieving what you are promising?
Yeah. I think that's what we're seeing from the current opposition, is that there's all of these. I mean, you know, they won't show us the money, if you remember that from, I don't know what election that was, maybe 2015 or 2011. You know, the whole show us the money thing, where National has been challenged now to actually show how they're going to pay for all of these promises they're making, and they're refusing to show evidence for their numbers. But they're not really being as hassled by the public for that as Labour would be, or Labour was at the time, for that. That show us the money line comes from John Key, but but National is just banking on its reputation as being good with money and therefore able to deliver its promises, whether that is true or not. There was one of the things that got me during the leaders' debate was a real logical fallacy and kind of more clarity around the racist dog whistling that I think we could see in that, particularly when Luxon was talking about health. And really not able to make the connection between the delivery of health services by Māori for Māori on the ground and the need for there to be governance of those, of how health services are being delivered to Māori at that kind of more national end. And he talked about two separate systems trying to touch on or trigger people's concerns about separatism in our system. And I think those kinds of things just all add up to it. Just it's not rational, it's not logical, it's all about kind of more divisive politicking than it is actually about delivering for the community. And they're making promises, they know they can't keep them. Most of the time when politicians make promises, they know they can't keep them. So what you're looking for is the values proposition in those promises. And the values proposition at the moment for Labour very much just steady as she goes, no big changes, speak to the centre. And for National, it's, you know, trigger people's inherent racism to increase their vote. So it's yucky all round. It's not inspiring at all.
It doesn't give the public a lot of faith too, because if you're making promises you can't keep, you're effectively lying. And there's a perception that all are involved in that. Well, looking at the latest polls, your Uncle Winston might even be back.
it does look like it, doesn't it?
Yes. Why are you laughing?
Well, it's amazing, isn't it? Like, there's just nobody else in New Zealand politics. Well, actually, except for the Māori Party, who's been able to, like, cycle through multiple elections of going in and out. And I think, you know, Winston is definitely benefiting from Labour's demise. I mean, we've seen this kind of structure of voting before, where both Labour and National go down and the smaller parties, the MNP parties, go up. So this is not unknown in New Zealand politics under MNP. This is, part of the cycle. And I think Winston is attracting a lot of disaffected Labour voters. And I'm not at all surprised that he's able to make a comeback. The question really is how much influence Shane Jones will have over the long term if they get in. So Winston is a great retail campaigner. Like, he's just brilliant at the one-liners and getting people's blood boiling for voting purposes. But when it comes to actually policy and negotiations and things, it's not likely, it won't be Winston who leads that. I would have thought it would be Shane Jones. And he's a little bit, you hear a little bit from him, but he's also a little bit in the background. And I think that's still to be understood exactly what role Shane Jones is going to play in the future if New Zealand First gets back in.
You know, they think we're all, you probably, me definitely, woke,
Oh, yeah.
I'm a woke bloke, so...
Yeah.
Because you have differing ideas. But look, as far as Māori voters are concerned, Matilia, we're okay to listen to people's differing political ideologies, ultimately, and I don't want to... I am clichéd. You know, it's up to the people to make their decision. As broadcasters, we allow people to talk about different strategies. I mean, one that took my ear when I was listening to Winston with Moana the other day, or watching, which was a strange interview. I wasn't quite sure how to take it. Sometimes it was funny, and sometimes it was seemed deadly serious and quite sort of heated.
Yep.
I don't know if you saw that, but he mentioned that he didn't think that Tomorrow's Schools had hit the mark. Well, that's fair enough to have a look at something after 30 years. But we do have people saying we need to rewrite the principles. It's impinging on the way our legislation and legal system operates because of the ambiguity of the statement, acknowledging the principles of the treaty. You've been working in that space too. What do you make of the sort of political rhetoric we're seeing around tribunal work? I mean, I get the feeling even Shane wouldn't mind if they disestablished that too. Some thoughts about the treaty and politics in 2023.
Yeah, that's right. I think I did hear Shane at one point talking about that the Waitangi Tribunal had, come to the end of its useful life because many of the land claims are either complete or going into direct negotiation. But there's all these other claims that are going on, like the Manawahine inquiry at the moment that they're doing. So, this idea somehow that some of the parties, ACT and New Zealand First, are definitely advocating that the treaty and Tiriti are only property agreements, that they're not about decision making, they're not about the rights of collectives beyond our land ownership and our property ownership, which is not the way that Māori, we think about it. It's not, generally speaking, it's not the way that the law has understood it. And the law, on the other side, the courts are deepening their understanding of tikanga Māori in the law. They're incorporating tikanga when there's a treaty clause in a bill and legislation. They're bringing tikanga Māori interests into their consideration. So I think we might end up seeing a bit of a divergence between the Parliament trying to constrain how we are developing our governance, developing our kind of rangatiratanga, and the way the courts are more accepting of it. And that, I don't know what that's going to look like if that divergence becomes quite serious. The court has its own jurisdiction. It can, it can definitely provide for tikanga Māori to be part of its decision-making without recourse back to Parliament. But if Parliament goes off in another direction, we might see two very different pathways, one about property and one about the right to be decision makers over the things that matter to us.
It's interesting. And what is also interesting, and you know this better than most, is the heated environment that Parliament is. And as we acknowledge 130 years since the suffragette movement that saw women the right to vote, for Māori women, it's been described as a toxic environment. We don't have to look too far, perhaps.
No.
You know better than most. But yet we have our wahine putting their hand up to stand. There's a really intriguing race going on into Te Hauauru, and that will be replicated in other Māori electorates. What would you say of Māori and wahine Māori in particular, still willing to get down there and duke it out in the rough and tumble of the New Zealand political scene in Wellington, despite the fact that it can be hard and that there can be overt racism left, right and centre?
Yeah. You're absolutely right. There's like more Māori women candidates again this election and across the parties too, across the political spectrum, which is really good. And there's going to be some fierce races in the Māori seats in particular. So one of the things that I noticed over my years was that Māori women will work together with each other to figure stuff out beyond the patriarchy and beyond the colonists, right? So they actually, the only reason they can even step up for these roles is because they have already figured out how to get good gains and achieve things without having to worry about, without being too badly affected by sexism and racism in the communities that they are living and working in now. And so they bring all of those skills, those communication skills, those networking skills, collaboration skills, and tikanga Māori, like their Māori āhua, into the process of Parliament. It doesn't necessarily change Parliament, but it does mean that they can still make good gains when they are there. And I think it's really... We may see changes over time. It'll be slow, but I think the more Māori women who fight for those decision-making roles, the better.
Tēnā koe, Mitiria. Thanks for sharing some time and kōrero with our peeps, and all the best until we get a chance to do so again. Ngā mihi.
Kia ora.
Tēnā koe, Mitiria. Today, joining us, she works at Otago University, can now be described as a political commentator, I suspect, former...